Welcome back to the X-Cast. The truth is in here. I'm your host today, Carl Sweeney, and thanks for joining us. And yeah, with me today on this episode is podcast patron Kurt North. Hi, Kurt.
Hi, Carl. Hope you're well.
I'm very well, thanks. I'm very well, and the weather's decent. At least where I am, anyway. I don't know about you up north.
Yeah, we've had a good few days, but we are starting to get the dark clouds looming over us at the moment. So I think it's going to be turning next 12 hours or so.
Well, it's been like, I don't know, it's been like 22 degrees or something down here. It's like tropical.
Yeah, it has been a hot, I must admit, it has been a hot weekend, so it's always good to see.
Anyway, I'll tell you something that's even more unpredictable than the British weather.
What could that be?
It's the X-Files mythology storylines, and that's why we're here today, isn't it? Because we're going to do a top 10 mythology episode.
We are indeed.
Top 10 mythology stories, yeah. I mean, I've wanted to do a top 10 episode for a while, and I suggested it a few times, and we're going to try this one, see if people like it, and if people do, we might do some more in the future. So what we're going to do, we're going to list our top 10 favourite mythology stories, aren't we? And I use the word stories there because we decided, I think, that the best way to do this is to count multi-part episodes as a single entry.
That's right, yeah.
If we want to. So we're going to do that. So, you know, two or three part episodes will count, will take up one place on the list. And we also, you asked me, can we count Fight the Future, didn't you? So we decided that Fight the Future is fair game, didn't we?
I know, we decided it wasn't. We decided to leave it out.
Oh, do we?
Yes. I asked the question, and you said you probably wouldn't make your top 10, so I was like, right, okay, well, I won't include it. So I haven't thought about it. So, okay. No, I've taken it out the list, if that's all right.
No, that's fair enough, yeah. It wouldn't have been on my list anyway, I don't think, at least. Anyway, so the point of this is, you know, have a bit of fun, see, you know, what we both think about what the best of the mythology is, and hopefully this will be like a conversation starter and people will do their own lists on Twitter and Facebook and stuff, and hopefully we'll, you know, drum up some discussion and debate. At least that's the intention anyway.
Yeah, it'd be good to see other people's opinions on where we fare with the mythology. It'd be really interesting.
Am I right in thinking you're a big myth arc fan? Like, the mythology is really important to you in terms of your interest in the series. Is that correct?
Yeah, it is. And it is still to this day. We've obviously gone through season 11 and my struggles and the problems that has. But the mythology is what really got me into the show. So, and I followed that through. And I think that mythological stories and long storytelling has been something that I yearn for in a lot of TV shows. I mean, I'm watching Westworld at the moment and things like that, Lost and episodes which do have that element to it and mysteries to it, I'm always drawn to. So X-Files is probably the beginning of that, and I've kept that going throughout the rest of my life, really. So I've really enjoyed really enjoyed the mythology side of stuff. And don't get me wrong, love the Monster of the Weeks and Darren Morgan stuff, but the mythology is where my heart really lies.
Yeah, that's interesting, because I think when the series was on originally, I think I was just kind of an all-rounder, you know. I mean, I was into all types of story, really. So whether it was a standalone, whether it was a conspiracy story, whatever, I was kind of into them all. So I think over the years, if anything, the mythology has become more important to me.
Right, okay, so you're almost like a reverse.
Kind of. I mean, I just don't think there's anything that quite beats like a first-class mythology episode in terms of like making your pulse quicken, you know, with a series.
Yeah.
Even the best ones really do stand up, I think, at least. Even though a lot of fans feel the opposite, they kind of seem to return again and again to some of those standalones. But no, the mythology still does the job for me, I think.
Yeah.
So how did you prepare for this one then? I mean, how easily did your list come together?
Well, the first half, I think, sort of fell together fairly easily. The last few were quite interesting. I think it's the way that I've viewed it as well, because I've tried to not view it as my best of top 10, as my best elements of the mythology. So, yep. So there is some interesting choices further down the list, and they kept jumping in and out. There was quite a few episodes that could have easily have taken the bottom four in this top 10, without a doubt.
Yeah, I found that I had like a top four or five that were kind of not in question. You know, they were going to be in there no matter what.
Yeah.
And then the rest was kind of up for grabs, and did a bit of shuffling around on my list. So I was wondering if you had any like borderline choices in this list, in the sense that, you know, there's always a bit of debate, I think, about what exactly is a mythology episode and what isn't. So how do you see that, and did that factor into your list at all?
It did. Season one was a particular one that I was kind of struggling with. I went through my list today, actually, as it happened, and I looked at it at one point, and I didn't have a season one episode in there. I do now. But it was touch and go.
You mean because the colonization stuff hadn't really kicked in? Is that what you mean?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, season one in itself was obviously, it's kind of self-contained. You know, the way that the season runs, it's from beginning to end, it kind of closes up. And obviously with the Erlenmeyer flask, that gives you the opportunity to jumpstart the mythology. Yeah. But I don't know. I think it just naturally, whenever I think of mythology episodes, I think of the multi-story, the multi-levels and things that have come before it, where season one was obviously a really early birth of what's to come. So, but as I say, I've rectified that over the last couple of hours. So so there is something in season one for those people who are season one diehards.
In terms of my list, I mean, I favour like a broad definition of mythology, I think. I think a couple of my choices are debatable.
Right, okay.
But I'm going to try and argue the case that they are mythology episodes. And
right, okay.
We'll see how we get on. Well, you requested the chance to do an honourable mention or two, didn't you?
Yes.
So I think we'll start with that. So, I don't know, isn't this just listing like a top 12 instead of a top 10?
Well,
I don't know.
I just think from a prospect of just a couple that kept returning to my four and again, kind of similar to what you were saying about are they mythology episodes, are they not, or how they work. I mean, I don't know if you want me to go through just the two.
Yeah, go on.
Okay.
Yep.
So my first one, which would be the one that kept coming in and out, which is the one that I was kind of saying, well, I think it needs an honourable mention, is Vianen from season 8.
Okay.
Because of the way that that episode was portrayed, really. It comes back, it harkens back to Piper Maroon Apocrypha in the way that the black oil is related to with the irradiation and the fact it's found in an oil field. And it's very separate to the mythology, but it's still using mythological elements to it. And I like the idea of doing a Monster of the Week show with that element involved. So things like The Unnatural or Ghouli as well, you know, things like that where they've taken an element from the mythology, and you don't necessarily have to have an overarching element to the whole story. It could be just like a side project. So like The Unnatural, obviously, we've got the alien bounty hunter in there, and obviously Ghouli with William and things like that, where it's its own story, and it can be linked into mythology in some ways with Ghouli, but Vianen very much feels like a self-contained story, and it's a nice buddy kind of movie with Robert Patrick as Doggett.
Yeah, and you have Mulder fired from the FBI, don't you, in that episode as well?
Yeah, and it's obviously a handing over of the X-Files office as well, which is a really important step moving into the end of season 8 and unfortunately season 9.
Will that be the last time season 9 is mentioned tonight?
Probably not. I don't know. I don't know, but maybe.
So did you have another honourable mention?
Yeah, it's kind of the same thing, purely because of the pure quality of it, and especially how late it's come into the game, was this. I think this is an outstanding episode. The without going back to my struggle for, but this really opened up the mythology again. It kind of opened up a new story, a new thread for us to follow. Now, as it happens, they didn't land an ending to that or land a new track to that. But I really enjoyed the element of it. It is a great episode. It does have fantastic pacing to it, and it's got all these callbacks. But the real reason why I wanted to mention it was purely because it does open up another story element. And the story element, I actually quite liked the sound of.
Yeah, I really liked that episode as well. So, yeah, two good choices there. For my honourable mentions, the first one is Jose Chung's From Outer Space. All right, so... Right. Possibly a debatable one. And my argument is this, that if something like Tempest Fugit or Max is a mythology storyline, you know, a standalone alien abduction story, basically, it doesn't really push forward the colonization aspect, then I think that you can also make a case for this episode, Jose Chung, you know, because basically it deals with one of the central pillars of the mythology, alien abduction. You know, I know people kind of treat Darren Morgan differently. People talk about him as if he's kind of writing his own little mini series. I mean, and I think his revival episodes kind of played into that too, you know. But I think we can't forget that he is just writing an episode of The X-Files that slots in with the rest of the series, even if it does kind of subvert what's going on around it, you know. So you've got lots of classic X-Files mythology, iconography here. You know, it ties into a lot of key themes of the series.
Yeah.
I mean, I think this might actually be one of the best episodes of the entire series, but I'm pulling my punches here slightly. I didn't want to come in and put it number one on my mythology list. So I thought I'd put it in the honourable mention slot, you know?
Okay, yeah, no, that's fine. I mean, I cannot confirm or deny whether Jose Chung is in my list or not, but I will put the proviso that Jose Chung is my favourite episode. So yes. So we'll see if that does make it, but I won't confirm or deny whether or not I included it or not.
Yeah, so I think there's a case for it. It'd be interesting to hear off listeners if they also feel the same way, because I get the feeling a lot of people would disagree, but we'll see. And my second honourable mention is Ghoulie, because I dearly wanted to include a revival-era episode, you know, because I did find most of the revival mythology interesting. Yeah. And I used the word interesting rather than good deliberately there. And I think that of all of them, Ghoulie came the closest to kind of... It wouldn't have got in my top 10, you know... Maybe not even the top 15 or 20, but it's probably the closest, you know.
Yeah.
I thought it was a very good episode. I thought it dealt with William / Jackson pretty well. And what I liked as well is it tees up My Struggle 4 nicely. And then obviously people's mileage will vary on, you know, whether My Struggle 4 delivered the goods there. Yeah, so my second choice is for Ghoulie.
Yeah, I mean, I would. I quite like the answer you've gave there, purely because I would agree. I mean, I'm as I said at the beginning there, I like my mythology, and I will try my hardest, as hard as I possibly can, to weave a storyline which I will enjoy over season 10 and season 11. And I can do that over the four struggles. I do have issues with them. I don't think they're the best mythology episodes at all. I've mentioned this, and I've mentioned Ghoulie as well, but I do like those two episodes. They wouldn't have made my top 10, same as yourself. And there is elements of all of the struggles and those two where I can weave my own narrative in, and it's still there, but it just isn't what it used to be, and that's basically where I stand with that. But I always am willing to give it a wide berth, whereas a lot of people are looking at the Monster of the Weeks and that's it, and you know, keep them completely separate and forget they ever existed. I'm not quite there.
All right, so main order of business then is our top 10 list. And I think the way we're going to do this, we're going to go back and forth, aren't we, from 10 up to 1.
Yep.
And obviously, you know, some of these episodes will have been covered on the podcast before. Some of them, probably a lot of them, won't have. I mean, we're not really going to go too in-depth tonight. I'm going to chat about them a bit, but the kind of thorough analysis will be for another day, I suppose. But let's start with you then. So what have you got at number 10 on your list?
Number 10, I have Patient X and the Red and the Black.
Ooh, tell me why.
The elements of the story of season 5 were kind of at a standstill waiting for the film, and even like season 4 to a degree. But what I liked about about the Patient X and Red and the Black really was having this intergalactic war that was going on elsewhere. And it's also the fact that you don't see it. And we never get to get involved in that side of the debate. It gives the syndicate something to talk about. They've got people within the ranks who are trying to side with the rebels, and then you've got the rebels themselves being introduced. And it's basically the end game for the end, which is obviously 2001 Son, of the syndicate and how that all comes about. So the reason why I've included it is purely because... it is the beginning of the end of the syndicate story, and the introduction of the rebels is an interesting take on like the alien bounty hunter and the stuff that they've done, and it opens up the wider universe.
Yeah, and like you say, with the rebels, I mean, it's really interesting, I think, that like the movie is kind of in the can, and then there's all this stuff, like extra stuff coming in as well, isn't there? You know, even though the film is around the corner, you know, the mythology is still kind of mushrooming, which is really interesting.
Yeah.
All right, so we may or we may not talk about these episodes further later. We shall see. It's going to be interesting, I think, to see where we overlap and like where we really do differ as well. That's going to be fun. Because number 10 on my list, anyway, is Biogenesis, The Sixth Extinction, and The Sixth Extinction 2, Amor Fati.
Okay.
And I sort of sense that these episodes are still not popular in some quarters of the fandom. That's just the kind of the impression I get. But I really like the kind of, I don't know, like the esotericness of them, you know.
Mm.
I feel like maybe they ebb and flow a bit in terms of quality and in terms of focus. You know, it starts off being a lot about Scully's kind of quest. And by the end of it, she almost seems kind of subordinate to Mulder's vision and everything.
Yeah.
But I feel like the three of them taken together are kind of greater than the sum of their parts, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think, it has also some of the most memorable visuals, doesn't it? It has the dream sequence of Mulder towards the end and the end of the world and things like that, which is quite interesting. Biogenesis, yeah, it's an interesting episode, those three. It's taken on a new role, isn't it? It's taken on the new part of the mythology trying to push that forward in something that kind of revisits in season 9, really. So, yeah, it's an interesting choice, that one. Quite like that one.
Yeah, and in terms of visuals, like you mentioned, one of the great moments, I think, is like Scully and the ship that's beached, you know, at the end of Biogenesis.
Yeah.
I think that's a fantastic image, you know.
It is, and it really shows off the LA kind of filming style, doesn't it, as well, having that beach sequence and the sun and stuff, so...
Yeah, and I think if I had to pick an individual favourite episode from that trio, it'd be The Sixth Extinction 2. I really do like that one, you know. All right, so that's my number 10, and we'll go to number 9. What's your number 9?
This Is Not Happening, Dead Alive. The story of Mulder's kind of wrapped up of the search for Mulder, and it's the beginning of the Super Soldier programme. What I particularly like about This Is Not Happening, especially, is Gillian Anderson's performance. I think it's probably just one of the best that she's done. It's interesting to see that they're trying to build an ensemble piece with people coming in, like Reyes coming in. It's got a kind of millenniumistic slant to it with the Absalom and the predicting of the alien invasion at the turn of the millennium, which didn't happen. But then Absalom turns around and says that, you know, it may have already started happening, and then they use that again in My Struggle 2, saying, you know, the 2012 date's gone, but it may have started in 2012. We're just seeing the tail end of that happening now. So I like the Millennium Mystic side of things. And finally, it's the definitely the end scene of This Is Not Happening, where Dogger is going to Scully, and especially the fact that you get a hint of what Dogger's past story was, and the foreshadowing of Skinner saying, you know, hopefully we're not going to find him in some field, and that's exactly what we do. Dead Alive is kind of what drags it right down for me. I find it a pleasing, episode, quite a good in episode, but This Is Not Happening carries all the weight for me on that particular two-part.
Yeah, well, I think we're in sync on this one, you know, because my number 9 pick is This Is Not Happening. And I've kind of cheated because I've chosen that separately because I didn't want to include Dead Alive. I mean, I do like Dead Alive, but basically what you said, I think This Is Not Happening is a great episode, you know.
Mm.
I wanted Season 8 to be represented, and I think that This Is Not Happening is the best of the Season 8 mythology, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And what I really like about this one, you know, how streamlined the plotting is. It's quite a simple tale, really, you know. But I also really respond to, like, the heightened, like, emotionality that's on display, you know. Like, that last 5 minutes is just kind of shattering, isn't it, you know?
Yeah, it is. And it just goes to show you how far that Scully's come as well. That the idea that she sees Mulder lying in a field dead, and her first instinct is to go back and find Jeremiah Smith, she wouldn't have seen that spaceship had she not believed that Jeremiah Smith could have done something. So even from looking from that point of view, that her role over the 8 seasons has completely changed by this point, that she's willing to believe in something, a miracle to happen to help save her partner. And I do like that aspect of it as well. You know, it isn't just a case of Scully doesn't see the spaceship anymore. It's a case of actually having an arc which is going to work really well in the concept of trying to find what happened to Mulder, and eventually, as we do find out, that he basically dies. But it is a really powerful, emotive episode, and it's got things like reflecting on closure with Starlight and things like that as well. So
yeah,
it has time to breathe as well. So it's a really, really good episode.
Yeah, and very like powerful use of like Mark Snow's music this one, especially towards the end of the episode, isn't there?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah.
All right, so good. We're in harmony so far, ish. And go on then, give us your number 8 then.
Piper Maru and Apocrypha.
Cool.
I've got now. It's the introduction of the Black Oil. It's something, it's one of the, when I was growing up, it was one of those really visceral sort of ideals or ideas that came, that you'd seen on screen, and it's hard to forget. An excellent piece of photography. I love the way that Krycek walks up at the end of the shot. It has an introduction that we're going to get into the film. And I also like it for the interconnectivity of season three as a whole, that it does go back to the Talipus in 731 and Nisei, that it does have the digital tape from Paperclip. So there's a lot of interconnecting stories that are going on with season three, and it becomes like a good series arc. It's probably, out of season three, probably the least of my favourites.
Yeah,
see where they end up, but it does have that that run, and they are getting to a point here where they're at full speed, and you know everything they put out is of really really high quality.
Yeah, I really like this two-parter as well. I'll confess, it didn't make my list, but it could have been in the running if I'd done it another day. You know what I mean?
To be fair, it did come in and out for me. It was one of those ones where do I not? Do I feel that it's going to fit in right? You know, and it isn't, as I say, it's a weird episode as well, because I keep forgetting about it, bizarrely, but every time I go back to it, I really enjoy it, so it does have its up and down moments, but I did feel I needed to include it, just purely with the introduction of the Black Oil and some of the photography that brings up, you know, the eyes and things like that, because I hate eyes, I hate people touching eyes, and having that in there was really something quite scary when I was a kid.
And in addition to that, I like the way that the Melissa Scully stuff is handled in this two-parter. You know, it's very tastefully done, I think.
Yes, it is, without a doubt. And it's nice to see. I think from the stuff that I've read before, that I think somebody mentioned that a Comic Con or similar event, to, I think it was Spotnitz, and said that you haven't really dealt with Melissa Scully, and that was kind of one of the ideas to bring it in. I think that's what happened.
Yeah, that sounds vaguely familiar to me as well. All right, well, my number eight pick is Dwayne Barry and Ascension from season two, of course.
Okay, yeah.
And, I mean, I imagine this will be the same for you as it is for me. I remember seeing these two as part of the VHS release Abduction in the UK, where they were spliced together with One Breath as well. So I must have worn out that tape. I would watch them, like, again and again.
I was the same. It was those VHSs, and that's what brought me into the show. So yeah, absolutely. It was great waiting to get those. They were called Files as well, weren't they? It was File 1, File 2, and yeah, it was really good. My next one is Dwayne Barry and Ascension.
That's your number seven, is it? All right, so we can talk about them together then. So yeah. I mean, I especially of these two, I love Dwayne Barry. You know, because I think that hostage scenario is just like maintained incredibly well by Carter, and of course it's his first episode as director, we shouldn't forget as well.
Absolutely. It's really suspenseful, it's really tight for it, and it has so many memorable moments. I mean, if you look at the Mark Snow CD, which you probably got, can't remember what it was called now, but that had elements of this episode in, with Dwayne Barry speaking over the music and things, and it was a really, really memorable episode. I really do like Dwayne Barry as an episode piece. It was one of my favourites growing up, without a doubt.
And the cliffhanger of Scully being attacked in her home, isn't it? You know, where he appears at the window. Very good.
And it would have been interesting, because I do think I saw it as the three-parter.
Yeah.
Obviously, without three being in there, it would have been interesting to see that. I don't think I saw that as a cliffhanger. I think I watched the whole entire video, so it would have been nice to have seen that as a cliffhanger, which is something that I've, you know, looked back on and maybe regret a little bit, but it was still good. And also a big part of growing up around that time was the song Red Right Hand as well.
Yeah.
That always was always used to be forefront in my mind, that song. I used to listen to that on repeat.
Yeah, so that's obviously what Dwayne Barry's listening to in his car, isn't it, when he gets pulled over, I think. Yeah, in Ascension. I mean, there's a lot to admire in that second episode too, isn't there? Because, you know, you've got, like, that song, like very memorable use of that music, like you say. Yeah. You know, other stuff, you know, Mulder on the cable car, you know, Duchovny getting physical, doing that stuff. And that's all really good too.
It is, and it's probably the first time that you see something of that sort of that brave to do something like that, you know, and to have Mulder on top of on a cable car and to showcase what the X-Files could do at that moment in time, to make it almost like a big event. It wasn't at that stage at that moment in time, but
yeah,
having that come in, it was obviously an eye-opener to say what the show could eventually do.
Yeah, I really like all that Skyline Mountain stuff. And I also really like the moment of Skinner reopening the X-Files, you know, at a time when, as a plot mechanism, that actually kind of still packed a punch, you know. It doesn't really register much in season 11. You know, the X-Files are shut. Well, who cares?
Yeah, but, yeah. It's because that's what they fear the most. And, you know, the way that Skinner delivers that line is brilliant. Really is.
So, Dwayne Barry and Ascension's my number 8. It's your number 7.
Yep.
All right, so let's go back to do my number 7 then.
Yep.
So, as you've already raised, it's Patient X and the Red and the Black for me.
Okay.
And I think I'm going to echo what you said, really. I mean, I really appreciate, like, the size of this two-parter. You know, like what you said, events going on in the skies above us on a scale we can't really comprehend. All the stuff with the rebels fighting this battle, ongoing battle with the colonists, you know. And I love that stuff. And the spectacle these episodes offer is just sublime, I think, you know. Like the stuff on the bridge, there's just like a real mix of like, it's like terrifying, you know. But it's also quite like awe-inspiring, the way it's done and stuff. It's really well handled, I think. So I think I've grown to like this two-parter even more over the years, you know.
Yeah.
I think it's very well shot, very well performed. And there's a lot of moving parts, you know. There's a lot going on with Krycek and Marita and well-manicured man and everything. But it seems to get a lot of that done, very skillfully, I think.
It does. And they, going back to the scene on the bridge, was obviously the... it was really powerful the way they did that with the regression of Scully.
Mm.
I thought that was a particular highlight of that episode. I detested, and I still do detest Mulder in those two-parter, purely because, you know, he is at a point where he's completely reverse of what he should be, and obviously it's building back up to the film. But the Scully scene was particularly the regression scene was particularly powerful.
Yeah, well, Mulder's so dislikable in that first episode, I think. But what I like about it is they're really kind of going for it with him there. Whereas earlier we've had this kind of thing of the skeptic Mulder, and they haven't really tried to do much with it, you know.
Mm.
And I know this two-parter is kind of just trying to get him back into his normal kind of characterization, I guess, by the end of it. But at least in that first part, I mean, I think Duchovny sells it really well, you know.
He does, and to get that feeling of, you know, you effectively like screaming at the TV at him, you know, it does give you that hate of like thing. But I understand the way they do it and why they did it. Would I have liked to have seen a bit more of that in the whole season, you know, leading up to it? I think it would have been, you know, maybe in a few episodes, I think it might have worked a bit better. But overall, as you say, the actual event itself, the way that he plays it, is really good.
Yeah. Okay, so let's have your number 6 then, Kurt.
Okay, my number 6 is Redux and Redux 2. I haven't included the end of season 4 because there wasn't a to be continued.
Is that right?
Yes.
Okay, interesting.
Because they wanted to leave end of, I can never say it, Gethsemane. They wanted to leave that as a cliffhanger. Do you know if Mulder's really going to be coming back? So to have a to be continued on it, it wouldn't have had that effect waiting for the next season. So I've just included Redux and Redux 2. It's a really unusual episode, Redux, for me. There's some fantastic stuff in there and there's some terrible stuff in there. I'm a big fan of the film JFK.
Yeah.
And the Mr. X scene with Donald Sutherland is something that I'm really, I really do enjoy. So the Krichkow speech, it's particularly, I know a lot of people don't like that, but I actually love that scene. I think it's fantastic. And if you put the two together, I think it would be very similar in pacing and tempo. So I really do like that. The round table scene at the end, I think, is brilliant.
Yeah.
As well with Mulder naming Blevins, which comes out of the blue. But that being said, it's still a fantastic scene. I also like the decisions that Mulder's facing and what Scully's facing as well, because you've got numerous different kind of possibilities that Mulder could go down. You know, he could join Cigarette Smoking Man. He can put everything on Skinner. He could blame Diane Scully, but then he doesn't. He basically says none of it. You know, it doesn't actually happen. He doesn't blame any of them. He ends up blaming Blevins. So I like the idea that he's got four or five different options that he can go down, and you know, it's the the decision that he's got to make on which way he's going to go. And obviously the dichotomy of faith versus science, which is an interesting thing. And another terrible decision is not terrible, but red herring is the sister scene. I don't see why or where they were kind of going with that. Apart from obviously, I know they were trying to go down the CGB route. It just felt a little bit contrived. But the overall and the monologues as well. Some of the monologues in the ones there's too many of them. But I would say you need to keep the Critchgar one in out of all of them. The Critchgar one and the Round Table, without a doubt, they need to stay. And they were both fantastic pieces of television.
Yeah, now I do like these episodes, and they're not on my list, but I do like them a lot. And I think I like the first part a bit more than other people do, because I hear some people really like lay into that one. And I don't think it's quite that bad, you know. I'm kind of in two minds about the Critchgow scene that you mentioned. I used to really like that scene as a kid, you know. I think, like, John Finn, who plays Critchgow, is fantastic, and he delivers the dialogue really well and everything.
Yeah.
It does seem a bit like he's explaining to Mulder what the Cold War is, and you sort of wonder if it's all strictly necessary.
Well, I absolutely think it's ridiculous. But then again, the JFK scene in JFK is ridiculous as well. But and it might be the musician in me. It's the tempo and the pacing of it and the rhythmic like beats that it's doing, and you know it is fast paced and it's you know it is a lot of exposition, and you know it's pieces of paper thrown in and you know and literally just putting newspaper articles and stuff like that. But as a piece of fun, I love it. I think it's fantastic. You know, it's not driving in a Mustang. You know, to say you've just come from a hospital. You know, it's at least it's got some depth to it. You know, so. But I do take it with a pinch of salt. You know, I don't take it absolutely seriously that anyone would ever speak like that, because they just wouldn't.
And I really like Redux too. I think that's a great episode as well. So, yeah, good stuff. Like I say, it's not on my list, but it could have been on another day, I think. And my number six is from the first season, and it's the Erlenmeyer Flask, the finale. So I feel like I could have put this one higher, to be honest. And I think in the first version of my list that I did, it was higher. But it ended up at six, and this episode just caps off the first season marvellously, in my opinion, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think the first thing I think of about this episode is the death of Deep Throat.
Yeah.
And the series had a real sense of jeopardy in those early years, didn't it, I think? And it kind of loses that as the years wear on, I feel, at least.
Yeah.
Things like the cigarette smoking man being resurrected again and again kind of dilute it in that sense.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
The Erlenmeyer Flask, I think, it conveys a great sense that there are a lot more mysteries like still to be uncovered, you know. You just still delve, you know, you're still just getting into it. There's lots more to find out. Mulder and Scully are getting in way above their heads, you know.
Yeah.
It's like they're kind of opening Pandora's box, and like that's alluded to in the episode. There's, I think Zeus Storage is on Pandora Street.
It is,
if I'm right, yeah.
That's right, yeah.
So I think it maintains that tone superbly, you know.
Yeah, I would agree with that. The Erlenmeyer Flask isn't on my list.
Oh.
And it was one of those ones where I think on another day it probably would have. My next one is actually from season one and has very similar themes to what you're saying.
Okay.
But the Erlenmeyer Flask for me is a fantastic episode. I just didn't have the same connection with it. There is elements with Deep Throat is talking in the Inzu storage, which has got some really good mythological parts to it, and we kind of start to venture into them eventually. But it's one of those. It would have made my top 10 in another week, I think. But obviously, it just hasn't made it for me this time.
No, that's fair enough. And just a quick side note, because like Little Green Men's not on my list, but I do really like the way Little Green Men picks up from the Erlenmeyer Flask. You know, a bit of time has passed, and whereas Mulder's kind of like defiant at the end of Erlenmeyer Flask.
Yeah, he's defeated, isn't he? Yeah.
By the time Little Green Men rolls around, yeah. So I just wanted to quickly mention that, because I didn't find room in my list for Little Green Men.
Yeah.
So your number five is from season one, yeah?
It is, yes. It's EBE. The couple of lines in it where Deep Throat says about a lie is convincingly hidden between two truths, that it's the first time that we get to properly question or Mulder gets the question Deep Throat on what his real end game is with the whole thing, and some of the themes and aspects to it. So Deep Throat says that the Once the shark stops swimming, it dies. Don't stop swimming. So he's still batting for Mulder, but there is that element of can you trust him? Can you not? What are the stories? It's very much from Mulder's point of view, and it's kind of emphasising that there's something more. It's almost like the opening of the Erlenmeyer flask in some ways. It's kind of like building towards that as the season one gets to an end. And also as well, you know, it wouldn't be fair of me not to mention, but it was the introduction of the Lone Gunman as well.
Yeah, and I don't know if I think there was ever a better Lone Gunman scene than that first one. You know, they're really interesting at that point in the series, aren't they? I personally feel they kind of they get a bit more cuddly as the series continues, and they're not quite as fascinating for me.
Yeah, absolutely. And also as well, it's the first time EBE that as well, thinking about it, is when Mulder and Scully almost have the upper hand on the conspiracy. It's when they obviously they're booking different flights and trying to get away from the people who are on the tails and things like that. It's really interesting sort of turnaround, because they've always been on the back, a lot of times they're on the back foot, or you know, they delve deeper into the mythology as later seasons get on. But this is really one of the first ones where we see that kind of attitude of both Mulder and Scully working together and working really well together to get to the end.
Like we were saying with Ghoulie, where we were saying, you know, it tees up some stuff for Maestro Gulf 4. Well, I think with EBE, Morgan and Wong, because they use Deep Throat so well in this episode, it means that his death does pack more of a punch in the Erlenmeyer flask, because it's easy to forget, but in a lot of Season 1, when Deep Throat appears, it really is just kind of a throwaway kind of...
Exactly, it's like Ghost in the Machine and stuff like that, isn't it, where he just appears and, you know, it's basically, you know, well, let's do this or let's do that, and it really does work. You're right, EBE definitely works from that point of view. He was a contrivance in a lot of the episodes. They didn't really know what to do with him. But I think that obviously they've found the calling on those two episodes.
Good stuff. All right. So that's your number five. And my number five is from season 7, and it's Requiem.
Right.
The finale.
Yep.
And I think just like considering the context in which this episode was written, I think it just works phenomenally well. You know, because we had Carter kind of, he was unsure, I think, would this be the series finale, you know, transitioning into a movie franchise? Would it be picked up for season 8? What exactly is David Duchovny doing? Is he back next year or not? You know, and I think considering that all of that's kind of in the mix, you know, it just works terrifically. I think it's the best of like the potential series finales, you know, like we had this, then we had Requiem, then we had Existence.
Yeah.
The Truth, of course, and then Maestro Gulf 4. I think it's, you know, of the episodes that could have been the end.
Yeah.
In some fashion.
Yeah.
It's the best one. Because I think that like coming full circle thing he's got going on where they go back to the case from the pilot, back to the location from the pilot, it just works a treat, I think. And you know, we got CSM's second death here, and I think his best one, you know, in my opinion. We got like the Last Supper moment where they're all gathered around the table, and just like the way all these different characters are managed generally, you know, the gunman, Krychek, Marita, Skinner, they've all got a bit to do. I mean, and I'll just mainly, of course, the unexpected developments at the end, you know, Mulder abducted as his sister once was, Scully pregnant, now we didn't think it was possible. I mean, obviously the baby would ultimately lead to some uninspiring drama in like season 9, but whenever I go back and rewatch Requiem, I never think about that.
No, I mean, I don't for a lot of season 8, you know, as much as I don't like the William storyline, season 8 is it's still a fantastic season. It doesn't matter what comes after it, you need to take it for each foot their own. Requiem isn't in my list.
Oh.
It's not, no.
So, are you a fan though?
I'm a big fan of Requiem. Yeah, I think it's a great episode. The only reason why I felt that it wasn't in my list is because the elements are about rebuilding the mythology, and at that point, and to be honest, yeah, when I look at this, yeah, seasons, I haven't got anything from season 7 going forward either. That a lot of it, things like Closure and Requiem and things that are kind of getting to the end of the natural progression of the mythology, and you know, it changes a lot from this moment onwards. And for me, it didn't have room in my top 10 to be in there. But as I say, yeah, without a doubt, it's a fantastic episode. It's not one I wouldn't shy away from. It just doesn't quite reach my top 10.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And like I said, it's kind of a sense that they're putting away some toys at this point, you know. And I don't know, I just think whenever I rewatch this one, it never fails to like deliver the goods for me, you know. Because at the time, I wasn't a huge Season 7 fan, you know, comparatively speaking. I actually like it quite a bit more now than I did at the time, you know. But I just remember, like, Requiem just, like, coming like a bolt from the blue, and it just kind of reawakened my interest in the series, you know.
Right. No, it's an interesting concept. Because it didn't really... I mean, I remember it being, like, you know, potentially being the end, and it was big news around at the time, you know, will the series go on, will it not? And, you know, I think hearing the stories and knowing that, you know, the future was very much in the air, probably, for me, kind of lost its edge a bit, just because you were hearing all these stories, you know, it was big news at that point, you know, whether or not the show was going to continue. And that may have put a bit of sweet taste in my mouth, potentially.
No worries. All right, let's have your number four then, Kurt.
Colony and Endgame. I think the introduction of the alien bounty hunter was a brilliant one. I'm a big fan of the Terminator franchise, so having that kind of feel to it was really good. But I also feel that, you know, up until this point, to a degree, I mean, we've got things like the clones in Erlenmeyer Flask and things. A lot of the episode of the season was about alien abduction and aliens and greys and, you know, and what we perceive, like in the pilot episode when it says these are based on true facts. At this point in the show, this is when it kind of first really kind of goes into a sci-fi concept. It's one of those ones that's kind of pushing the boundaries a bit. And there was some resistance from me from that to a degree, but I feel that the way that it finishes is an outstanding piece of television. With what they did with that, and the submarine scene was absolutely fantastic, and you get in the development of development of Samantha, because obviously, you know, you've got the bounty hunter and Mulder having that exchange between him, saying, you know, he just really wants to know where she is, which is brilliantly played by Duchovny. It's a wonderful line, the way he delivers that line on the floor. And his faith to keep looking, and all those kind of aspects of it feels really rounded. The actual episode itself is really rounded, and it's an interesting development that they put in. And as I say, this kind of sci-fi concept really starts to push in on that point.
Yeah, I love this two-parter. Again, it's not on my list, and I actually almost went back into my list and swapped it out for Dwayne Barry and Ascension.
Right.
Okay. But I thought, no, the list is done. The list stays as it is. But yeah, really like these two. Yeah, so much good stuff, you know, Skinner and X going at it as well.
Yeah.
And I think what you were saying about the, you know, they're sort of coming out of the shadows at this point, you know, they're pushing it more into the realms of like hard sci-fi, aren't they? And
yeah.
I seem to remember reading that was slightly controversial behind the scenes at the time, you know.
I can imagine it being that, yeah, because the X-Files was very much based, and Chris Carter said this a few times, because he always said about the time travel, you know, he would never do time travel, but he had to eventually do that down the line, or like an episode like Monday, which is very much a high concept idea, that I can imagine that happening, because the X-Files at that point was as good as much as alien abduction can be. It was a very grounded show, so to push it that far, I think I can imagine it being quite a controversial idea.
Yeah, anyway, an outstanding choice, Kurt, I salute you, but it's not on my list, sadly.
It only gets better.
I think my number four is possibly a debatable one.
Okay.
But let's see. I've chosen for my number four, Paper Hearts. All right. And I think the question is this mythology?
I would say
and
yes.
And I would argue that it is because, well, for several reasons. You know, it deals with Samantha. She's obviously the driving force for Mulder's quest, you know. The episode kind of engages with the iconography of her abduction, you know. So we sort of see that little green men scene kind of reimagined, don't we? With Roach at the door. And of course, it, you know, the episode very much focuses on the family dynamics of the Mulder kind of clan, doesn't it? So for those reasons, it makes it mythology for me. But I know people's mileage might vary, I suppose.
Yeah, and the alternative storyline, isn't it? It's the another a really good, actually, at that point in the show,
yeah,
to have a different explanation for it, and the way that they did it was fantastic. And is it Tom Noonan? Is that his
Tom,
name?
Yeah, Noonan.
Tom Noonan. I think he plays Roach absolutely outstanding. I think that's a brilliant piece of casting, that. I really do. I'm kicking myself now. I didn't even think about Paper Hearts. But yeah, no, it's I would definitely say it's a mythological episode without a doubt. It's definitely high up there in my rewatches without a doubt. It's a fantastic piece of television.
Oh, I'm glad you agree with me then, because I sort of thought you might not. But
it has to do with that. And what I really like as well is, as I said, it's giving the alternative storyline, which is something I'll link into in a future episode.
Okay. Well, like you say, I think Tom Noonan, he plays just one of the most chilling characters we'll ever encounter on the series here, and does it so brilliantly. And opposite him, you know, Duchovny, I don't think he... If he's been better than he is in Paper Hearts, it's rarely, you know what I mean? He's absolutely on top form in this episode, isn't he?
Yeah, he is. Oh, without a doubt, yeah. Brilliantly.
Yeah. Like, the dream, like, imagery we get here, it's just so simple.
Yeah.
But I think, like, it's the simplicity that makes it so unsettling as well, you know?
Yeah, and again, it goes back to what I was saying before about likes of this and being, and having an episode like that, where it is linked to the mythology, but it's its own separate story, and it's just a little pocket of information or an interesting Monster of the Week or sort of twist on the mythology. I think it really works well from that point of view.
Absolutely does. Really does. Lots of great moments, you know. I think one of my favourites is the moment when Mulder, you know, he's taken Roach and he lets him kind of go off on his little spiel, and then he says, you know, wrong house.
Yeah,
it's just a fantastic moment. All right, we're getting to the business end now, aren't we? So what's in third place?
Third place is Nicaean 731.
Ooh.
It's a monster of an episode. I think it's could easily have been a movie, without a doubt. Mulder and Scully are split up during the episode, but they both have decent stories. So the development of Scully's eventual cancer arc is a good standing off point with the MUFON members. You've got, this is what I was saying before about the having a realistic different standpoint from Scully's point of view. So we're talking about Paper Hearts and having the alternative reality to that. Scully's standpoint is actually quite credible at this point, because we see a lot during the first three seasons where Scully, you're wrong. You know, it's Mulder's going to be jumping all these different theories out, and inevitably he ends up being the right thing. Now, I'm not saying that she's right here, but it's credible what she actually says about the apologies policy and what the American government has done in the past. And, you know, you're touching on aspects of the Japanese war crimes that were real life events. And X-Files isn't exactly brilliant at handling stuff like that. You know, like we'll take the challenge of disaster in space, for example. But the way that it deals with that is fantastic. I also think it's one of the scenes that stays in my mind so much is so daunting is the piling of bodies as well. It's such a really heartbreaking scene, and I think it's just played really well. And there is a bit of a MacGuffin with the bomb on the train, getting the red-haired man and Mulder to talk to each other, and there's a lot of exposition goes on in the second part. But it doesn't feel that way. It feels like it is running quite quite fast. There's also humour in there, and there's the things like the scene where Mulder gets kicked down, and he brings another gun from his ankle holster, and supposedly that was from the web, saying that he gets tired of losing his gun, and that was a direct reference to that. So there's a lot in there, but I think the overall, it's just an outstanding hour and a half of television.
Yeah, great two-parter. Not on my list again. I don't know why. This was in the running. This is on my first list I made. It got swapped out. But I love 731, I think, the most as well, because I really enjoy that stuff on the train, you know.
Yeah.
And like you were saying about Scully having a credible alternative stance, I like the way it kind of boils down to the first Elder turns up and he kind of outlines an explanation for her, doesn't he, about what could be going on. Mulder's got different ideas, and I really enjoy the kind of way that plays out, you know.
Mm.
And again, this is one of those ones I do think of it as a film because of seeing it on VHS spliced together.
Yeah, you know? 82517, it was its title.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, season three mythology, they were really going great guns, weren't they?
They were, absolutely. Yeah.
All right, but it's not in my list, and in third place for me is Seinenzeit and Closure.
Right.
Again, the question, is it mythology? I think some people would argue it isn't. I think it has to be, again, for most of the reasons I mentioned in conjunction with Paper Hearts, really. And, I mean, I don't necessarily think these episodes are better than Paper Hearts, because I think Paper Hearts actually probably is the superior installment. But for whatever reason, these two just pack slightly more of an emotional punch for me. And like, what's interesting for me, at least, is that wasn't always the case. I think when I first saw these episodes, I always liked them to some extent, but they just didn't have that power for me that I found when I revisited them probably in like 2015, you know. So it's kind of interesting how our own responses to episodes can change, even though obviously the episode is the same as it always was, you know.
Yeah.
I find the fan reaction to this one interesting because I think even to this day there's like health, you know, a pretty strong debate about whether or not this is like a fitting end to Samantha's storyline or not. What do you reckon?
It's not in my list, but not for the reason that you would think. I'm quite open to the fact that the way it ends. I was in tears when I saw the end of Closure. I found it really powerful.
Yeah, it is.
And I would, I have it. It's on, I'm looking at my list at the moment. It is in there, so I do class it as a mythology episode, because we find out that we find the diary for a start off. So the diary is effectively saying what happened to her. So we're finding out the story. Walk-ins were mentioned way back in Red Museum.
Yeah.
So to having that little sort of connection to the two is an interesting concept. I just feel that the first part was kind of what didn't make it for me. First part is very much a kind of a monster of the week. It's an emotional piece because it's Anne Boleyn, I think she was called.
Yeah, that's right.
So it was Anne Boleyn. It feels like a little bit disjointed, but one of the most heartbreaking stuff, as well as Mulder accepting because Mulder accepts it at the end of the day because he says, you know, I'm free. It's the I can't remember his name. Who was the psychic?
Harold.
Harold. He's just point blankly refuses to let go, and that's what I find really heartbreaking about that episode. Yeah. I think it's beautifully played. With regards to me and the mythology of it, it was in the discussions in my head. But it just didn't make it, just purely because I felt there was more of the mythology, more of the story elements that I was interested in. This is, again, it goes back to Requiem. For me, it was kind of like it was getting to the end. Things were starting to wrap up. It felt like it was coming to a natural close. And we've obviously got like Two Fathers and One Son as well, which obviously closed off an element of it. So it just felt like, to me, it was getting to the point of the end of the run. So that's why it's not really in my top 10.
Yeah, no, I understand that. I just remember like these episodes coming along in season 7 and really standing out in contrast to some of the stuff that had come just before it, you know, stuff like unremarkable stuff like Rush or The Amazing Malini or whatever. And then Seinen Zeit turns up and I just thought it was brilliant, you know.
Yeah. And I think I was 1999, wasn't it? So I was turning 19, 20 at that point. So I'd gone through quite the run of the full show, and I think because of the rewatches, you know, at that point you were buying VHS, you know, I'd seen the first three seasons a hell of a lot, and season 7 comes along and DVDs were starting to come out, and you know, at that point I wouldn't say my natural instinct was waning for the show because I'd still watch it to the bitter end. But I don't think I was as invested at that 19 years old as I would have been when I was 17, 18, 16. I think it's probably something to do along those lines as well.
I'd definitely come out the other side of like the peak of my obsession, you know. So, and just a quick note before we move on, I think Duchovny's astonishing again in these two episodes, you know.
Yeah.
Like that scene you mentioned with the diary, he's great. You know, dealing with the Lapierre family, reacting to his mother's death, lots of good stuff from him.
And it was very apt at the time as well. There was a lot of Morbi going around at that point.
there was. All right. Top twos then. What's your second place?
Blessing Way, Paperclip, Anasazi.
Oh, yes, of course. Yes. Okay.
Yeah. It was the first three-parter on file one, the open unopened file, as we mentioned before, on VHS. It was, I think, going back to where I probably was in the show, that I'd probably seen, I don't think I'd seen Endgame and Colony before this. I think I probably saw Blessing Way Paperclip, and I keep saying the wrong way, Anasazi Blessing Way Paperclip before Endgame. So I think it's more to do with the idea that it was one of the big first things that I saw. It was just like outstanding. I love the international conspiracy and the broadening of the syndicate. I think that was a really wise choice because cigarette smoking man up until that point was very much you know, straight up, you know, evil nemesis. You know, he was always baiting at them. Having this syndicate there helped to expand that side of things, but also as well that, you know, we had different people in that syndicate who seemed to have different ideas, and it was, and the syndicate didn't seem to be that all knowing, all powerful. They had those issues. They seemed to have issues between them, and you know, it was this little club that they were together, and it totally built that up, and I thought that was fantastic. And even where, you know, you get the First Elder worrying about Melissa shooting, because he's like, he's really kind of like, sort of, you know, so, you know, is that going to get out? You know, he feels that way. The scene with Cigarette Smoking Man and Skinner when they're talking about the heart attack or a plane crash, you know, that type of thing as well, that kind of really ups the game. Then you get the some of the wonderful scenes with Klemper as well. I think that is definitely fits into my memories. It's instilled into my memory how good that scene was. And the way that Mulder's starting to piece things together at this point, he's starting to understand what his part of the mythology is. You know, that his dad's so involved, that he's returned from the dead to basically now he's got this purpose of actually going out there and getting to the truth. The only thing I would say that kind of suffers is I don't mind some of the spiritual blessing way part of it, but it does slow the actual event down to quite a troll. That's the only thing I would say about the episode, is it's the only downside to it to a degree.
You mentioned about the Smoking Man, and yeah, these episodes, they kind of reveal, don't they, that, you know, there's a limit to how powerful he is within the within the group and everything.
Yeah, I mean, he's so wonderfully considered in one breath, but then, you know, you see him here, he's falling apart, he's desperate. That's what I really like, that, you know, it's completely separate to what we saw early in the season.
Yeah, and that great scene, of course, with Skinner towards the end, with, you know, this is where you pucker up and kiss my ass. And,
yeah, absolutely. That's one of the best scenes ever in the whole entire show. I love that scene.
Yeah, and supposedly Mitch Pileggi's favourite scene as well, you know. Yeah. So, yeah, great, great episodes. I mean, my number two is One Breath from season two.
Okay.
Which I just think is incredible, you know. I mean, it's a great Mulder episode, of course it is, you know. Yelling at the hospital staff when Scully's admitted, you know, dealing with X in the car park, ultimately deciding to return to Scully's bedside. So he gets a lot to do. But what I really like is it's also a great Scully episode, despite the fact that there are these limits on what Gillian Anderson could do at the time. You know, she'd just given birth like days before or something. So this kind of thing they come up with where she's like drifting on the in the boat and everything. I just think very simple. Could be silly if it didn't work, but
yeah,
it comes off, I think. The gamble pays off, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
Beyond those two, though, there's great material for Skinner. There's, like, really good stuff with the Scully family.
Yeah.
Interesting moments for the Lone Gunman. So I just get a sense, you know, the series at this point is starting to use its supporting cast, like, very intelligently, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, like, for my money, though, that Mulder-CSM confrontation is, like, one of the best scenes in the history of the series, I think. And obviously they go back to it again and again, don't they? They try and...
Yeah, they try and replay it. I mean, yeah, even to the point of My Struggle 1, don't they? And it just doesn't come off the same way. There's variations of it that sometimes work, but no, One Breath, without a doubt, is my number one. So we can talk about that, and then we'll talk about your number one. But the I would absolutely, totally agree. And now, The Blessing Way and Paperclip, especially Anasazi, Blessing Way, Paperclip. I keep doing that every single time I talk about those. Because I always think of beginning of season three and forget about season two. That has always been in my head, say 2 or 3 years ago, the number one for me. These two are interchangeable. I think that One Breath, the reason why I chose One Breath is similar to what you were saying. It's got some great Mulder stuff in it. It's got the Mr. X basically saying, you know, I used to be you, and we're getting a bit more information about him. You've got Skinner's sort of Vietnam War, you know, talk, sort of backstory. You've got Melissa and Mulder coming against each other. Some of the introduction, and then you've also, on top of that, you've got all these little character pieces, all within 43, 44 minutes, which I think is outstanding. The pace of it is, I think, is perfect. From that point of view, I think is the reason why I've put it as number one. But even with all those character pieces, and, you know, some of the faith themes that's in there with Scully on the bed, and and all that type of thing. The mix seems to be perfect. They would try to replicate that with like some Memento Mori later on down the line. But even with the inclusion of that, there's little bits of information that's starting to seep into mythology at this point as well. There's the introduction of the Thinker, who we only ever see in Anasazi. Then you've got, obviously, Cigarette Smoker Man's scene, which I totally agree is my favourite scene in the entire series. But you've getting, and the way that Byers throws it off on this comment where they talked about branched DNA, hybridization, it's all junk DNA, but none of that really matters. But it's a throwaway line, but it does in the grand scheme of things, and it's only touched upon there. So the genesis of that idea is in within one breath, and from there on, that's when the mythology really kicks in. And I think that from those little comments that they've made, whether or not they knew where they were going to go, which most of the time, as we know, they probably didn't, but that genesis of the idea of branched DNA hybridization and what it's doing to people, it has that momentum pushing forward into the rest of the show.
Yeah, and like you say with, you know, them kind of making stuff up as they go along, it's really remarkable to consider how much this was just driven by the fact that Gillian Anderson was pregnant, you know, and that they had to kind of improvise. So it's really interesting for me to kind of wonder what season two would have been like had that never come about, you know. Because these episodes are so crucial, aren't they, to...
Yeah.
You know, the abduction storyline, of course, so crucial to what happens like further down the line.
Yeah, and with the mythology episodes as well, because of the way it was a happy accident that, you know, they had to push on for it. A lot of the times, the mythology episodes themselves ended up being the sweeps and were the big blockbuster episodes that were always the sort of in there the highest rating. Shows that were put out at particular times because they knew that that's what was drawing people in. The mythology was drawing people in. So without them, my guess would be I don't think you'd get past the second season, you know. But it's that momentum that season three seems to really kick on. Season two, season three really kick on. You know, is outstanding.
Absolutely, absolutely. And well, One Breath just incredible, I think. But it's not top on my list. It's number two.
I'm interested to see what your top is.
Because my number one choice is, of course, My Struggle 4. No, it's not. It's not.
I thought you were going to say Providence.
Not quite. My number one is Anasazi, The Blessing Way, and Paperclip.
Okay.
You know, I couldn't see beyond this one, really. One Breath was always at number two, and this one was always at number one for me. You know, this trilogy. This is the peak of the mythology as far as I'm concerned. So many, I know you talked about this already, but like so many memorable lines, so many memorable exchanges and scenes, you know, so many revelations and, you know, new developments. But also, at this point, you're kind of left with a sense, or at least I am, that A, it feels to me like everything still hangs together. There's still a plan, you know. And B, that there's still a lot more to come. You know, we've only just unraveled some layers. You know, there's much more to be unearthed. So I love all that, really do. And again, as we've kind of alluded to, I've got lots of affection, lots of nostalgia for just watching these ones again and again on VHS.
Absolutely. It was 2 hours 10 minutes long, and I used to put them on repeat sometimes. I just found them amazing.
So I mean, if you try and break them down in terms of individual episodes, the way I kind of see it is I think you've got two 10 out of 10s, which are Anasazi and Paperclip, or, you know, as close to 10 out of 10 as you could get,
yeah.
You know. And The Blessing Way are probably like an 8 or something. I mean, I like The Blessing Way a lot more. It seems to have become a bit unfashionable for the reasons of, you know, the Vision Quest sequences or whatever, however you want to label them. For me, they don't really detract from things too much, because I think we shouldn't lose sight of the fact that they take up relatively little screen time overall.
Yeah,
I know, like, the visuals are a bit creaky and whatever,
but I think the visuals as well, I think they wanted to do more with it, but they just didn't have the money as well. So I mean, a lot of it you have to consider that, you know, they are still working within a TV budget, and, you know, the fact that, you know, they couldn't get what they really wanted on screen, you know, it might have looked a lot better. But yeah, I totally agree.
I mean, so many great moments, isn't there? We've mentioned some of them, but, you know, you've got scene after scene, you know, Scully shooting Mulder in Anasazi.
Yeah.
You know, Mulder squaring up to Skinner earlier in the episode, you know.
Krycek's reveal,
you know, Smoking Man saying to burn it, you know.
Yeah.
And a scene I really like is when the well-manicured man turns up, you know, we meet him.
Yeah.
That exchange he has with Scully about, like, they'll kill you one of two ways. And then just all the way that plays out with Skinner coming to the apartment and everything.
Yeah, and as I mentioned before about the international conspiracy widen up, so you're able to then leap into like the likes of Nicey or you know, like Piper Maru with the French, and then you've got Tunguska and Terma. It opens the show up, but the aspects of likes of Well Manicured Man, who became a fan favorite, was you know, you had all these elements that were in the American conspiracy that had different viewpoints. And it just added to the colour of the show, really.
Yeah, I can't say enough about these. I mean, I'd never get tired of rewatching these either. I can watch them again and again. You know, and even if people think the mythology goes off the rails or whatever. I mean, I think I like the mythology much later than some people do. I think a lot of people check out after, like, Two Fathers, One Son.
Yeah.
I actually enjoy a lot of that stuff that comes afterwards. But whatever you think about when the mythology peaked, there's no taking away from just like what an achievement this trilogy is, I think.
No, without a doubt. I mean, like I said before, One Breath and Anastasia Blessingway Paperclip could have easily, we're talking a whisker, have been changed for me.
Yeah.
It could have been the same way as way you've got it. It's just on balance on that particular, you know, 2 hours ago. it might have changed around. But they're so close together for me that you know, that whole season two, season three, without a doubt, is my favourite two seasons.
Great stuff. So I guess I'm pleased that we had kind of quite a high level of agreement, but also, you know, at the same time, we brought in plenty of episodes that didn't make the other person's list. So it's been a good chat, hasn't it?
It has, yeah. Really enjoyed it.
Yeah, me too. So I think what people should do now, if you haven't already, please get in touch with us on Facebook in our group and stuff, or on Twitter, wherever it may be. And we want to see some top tens from some other people too. I'm really interested when people have like left field choices and stuff, you know.
Yeah.
So obviously there's parts of the mythology we haven't touched. We haven't discussed really anything to do with Emily, I don't think.
No, I would never discuss Emily.
Yeah, not much to do with William, really. Not a huge amount anyway. And yeah, like we brushed past the revival, didn't we? But we didn't get into the My Struggles at all. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see what other people like, you know.
Absolutely, we'll look forward to seeing that.
Great stuff. So in the meantime, Kurt, where can people find you online?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter. My handle is at @rmuldrake, so rmuldrake.
Perfect. All right, I mean, you can find us in all the usual places, principally on Twitter at the @X_cast, or on Facebook, go to X-Files Basement, find our group there. And please join in the discussion. If you'd like to support the podcast, please go to patreon.com/thexcast and have a look at what we're offering for patrons there. Thanks for joining us for this first top 10 episode. Until next time, trust no one.
The Xcast, an X-Files podcast, is produced and presented by Tony Black, alongside a dedicated group of podcasters and X-Files fans. You can find us on Twitter at The Xcast, and on Facebook if you type in The Xcast, or at our group, X-Files Basement, an Xcast podcast fan group, where you can continue the discussion about all things Mulder and Scully. If you want to support The Xcast further, you can now subscribe and become a patron of the show on Patreon. On Google, just type patreon.com/TheXcast. That's PATREON. You'll see all of our tiers, subscription options and perks, which include early access to episodes, bonus content such as commentaries on X-Files episodes, access to a patron chat zone, and even appearing on one of our patron roundtable discussions. We would appreciate any support you can give the show, so just go to patreon.com/TheXcast to find out more. Our title music is provided courtesy of Will A, who you can find on Twitter at I am Will A Y E.